Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, our roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, we look to the end of American Idol, a show that turns out not to be eternal, but did give us a lot of bad cover versions of Alicia Keys. We'll return to one of our favorite topics and talk about some of the people we're pulling for. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. So stick around.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. NPR's new Politics Podcast is where NPR's political reporters talk to you like they talk to each other, with weekly roundups, short takes on news, and reporting from every stop on the campaign trail. You don't have to keep up with politics to know what's happening this election year. You just have to keep up with them. Listen and subscribe to the NPR Politics Podcast at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
We're auditioning to go to the Hollywood in Your Heart this week, but before we get started, let's go around the table here in historic Studio 44. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And with us this week is our friend Tanya Ballard Brown. Tanya, what do you do at NPR?
I'm an editor for our website, and I sing with a band.
You sure do. What's the name of your band?
The Lee Masters Music Explosion.
They're very good. And we are bringing back a pal who last appeared on the show in December of 2010, yet another Boston area culture brain, for those of you who like it when we get into that kind of thing, Mark Hirsch. Mark, what do you do when you're in the 5 years between Pop Culture Happy Hour appearances?
I write about music for the Boston Globe, and I've written about pop culture for various other publications and outlets, including, on occasion, NPR.
That's right. You have been in the Monkey See blog, occasionally edited by me. And also, I should point out, since we last had you on the show, you have acquired a baby.
I have, and if nobody finds out that I did, I get to keep it.
That's right. That's right.
How do you acquire a baby?
That's right. He has, well, Tanya.
If I told you, they would take it away.
Okay.
It were the alternative answer. Well, when you love someone very much. So this week, we saw the beginning of the end of American Idol, which premiered in June 2002 and is about to fold after 15 seasons. It's changed judges, it's crowned winners, it sparked controversy, and it drove Clay Aiken almost all the way to Congress. Now, I want to start with Stephen for one very simple reason,
right,
which is, as many of you know, Stephen and I began our friendship in December of 2004 mm-hmm. as internet pen pals.
Yep.
And we talked about American Idol quite a lot in that first season in 2005, which is the Carrie Underwood season.
I mean, early drafts of the concept for this show
yeah.
were that you and I were going to sit around and talk about American
Idol. American Idol, that's right. That was our first idea. Our first idea was we'll just talk about American Idol. So when did you approximately give up watching the show?
For me, I stopped watching partway through season 10. That was the season that Scotty McCreery mm-hmm. and
Head Tilt McGee.
and the judges at that time included Steven Tyler. And
yeah, that was a dark time.
It was dark days for American Idol. Basically, whoever came in, let's say, ninth that season was eliminated. And the judges just gassed on about that person and how it didn't matter that they were eliminated. They were going to be a star.
Yeah, that was very much what that group of judges did.
That was the
and
most
it happened.
Yes, exactly.
And that person's name is, I don't know.
Ninth place in Steven Tyler American Idol season.
And I realized, like, the show had crossed a major, major tipping point where it went from a show that was largely, not entirely, but somewhat, about puncturing delusions.
Yeah.
And it went from puncturing delusions to feeding them.
Yeah.
If you remember what people talked about the first episodes of American Idol, it felt very novel because you had this mean British guy who told bad singers the truth.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you had a bunch of people, in some cases, some of those bad auditions were people who had never been told they couldn't sing.
Right.
In some cases.
And had been told they could sing a lot.
Yeah. And in some cases had paid vocal coaches right. a lot of money, you know, set aside studio time thinking they were going to yeah. break big as singers.
Yeah.
And so part of the show was like, the vocal doesn't lie. It reached this point
yeah.
where it lied.
Yeah.
And it lied all the time, and yeah. it lied to the contestants.
Well, they no longer had a no man.
Yeah. And most creative enterprises actually need an, this I know it defies the laws of improv.
Yeah.
Mark Hirsch, improv veteran. But
it's true.
But most creative enterprises need somebody
I'd like
to say,
that stricken from the record.
Need somebody to say, like, no, that wasn't good.
Yeah. So, TBB, when did you stop watching Idol?
When you first asked me this question, I was certain that I had watched season 5. I remembered that Jordan Sparks won.
I'm sorry, season 5 is Taylor Hicks.
Season 6 was Jordan Sparks.
See what I'm saying? So somewhere before then, because I watched from beginning to end, like the first 3 seasons.
Yeah.
And then I think the next 2, I watched the auditions and kind of faded in and out. Mm-hmm. And then I guess I tuned in when Jordan won.
Yeah.
And that was the last time because it just got sort of cringeworthy.
Right. Mark, what was your history of viewing?
I actually joined it fairly late. I started watching it, I think, halfway through the 3rd season.
Oh.
And I can't actually explain why I started. It was probably just some general understanding that there was this cultural monolith that was not going to go away, and I was just going to keep on bumping my head up against it until I finally submit it to its giant monolithicness. So that was halfway through the Diana DeGarmo Fantasia Barrino season.
All right.
So you missed
Ruben.
Yes,
I missed Ruben, actually, and to this day I've missed Ruben. I actually went back and revisited the first season after I realized that I was deep and the only way to get out was to go through.
So you also missed Justin Guarino?
I saw Justin Guarini. Justin Guarini and the Kelly Clarkson season.
Did you see their movie?
I did see their movie. I was, like I said, I was heavily invested at some point. I watched the World Idol two-night event where Kelly Clarkson, was brought there to win, lost.
And I should point out, you as a guy who writes about music, you have written about shows by former idols. Is this true?
I've written about many shows by former idols. I can't remember exactly what the count is. I can rattle them off for you.
Rattle off some.
Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood,
Clay
Jordan
Aiken.
Sparks, Clay Aiken, not a former idol. Second.
Well, no, but I'm talking about contestants.
You went to a Clay Aiken show.
Oh, he
I
did.
Went to a Clay Aiken show.
For work.
Yes. My favorite part of that story of Mark at the Clay Aiken show is that he kept telling me about how there was this woman.
I need to point out, she was very nice and for the most part seemed very tethered to reality.
Exactly. But who kept, grabbing your arm?
She had seen him a number of times before.
She was following his tour. Around.
As Clay many people
Aiken.
Did.
Oh, yeah.
Many people
Ooh, yeah.
followed Clay Aiken. Serious. There was one person who was holding a sign that said, I believe, our 100th Clay Aiken concert.
Yeah.
She had seen this particular tour before where he was doing basically the playlist of your local mix station with the hits of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s,
right.
and now.
Yes.
And in the
Sounds
80s...
Sounds like the Lee Masters music explosion.
And in the 80s segment, she grabbed my arm and said, get ready. And that's when Clay Aiken sang When Doves Cry.
So the reason I love this story, here's why I had Mark tell this story. This story is my favorite encapsulation of the particular brand of thing that Idol does. Mm-hmm. For some people, like Kelly Clarkson, it makes you a regular kind of pop star, right? That's what happened to Kelly Clarkson. That's what happened to Carrie Underwood. It's country.
For 2 people.
Exactly.
It makes you a regular kind of pop star.
Well, a couple, like Fantasia is an R&B, some people, different genres,
And Chris Daughtry had, who I've seen several times, has had, mainstream success.
Right. And I would still argue that the Philip Phillips song Home is the best calculated song that show has ever
Correct.
Released.
Not
in the sense
an actual Mumford & Sons song.
Exactly. But it was very Mumfordy at a time that was what everyone was doing. So for some people, it's that kind of success where it's regular success, right? And that can be, as Tanya said, in genre. There are also a bunch of people. There are people who are successful in R&B. But there are also people who are successful in gospel and country and on Broadway.
On Broadway, definitely.
But there are also these people like Clay Aiken is, and like I would argue, I think Adam Lambert is, although less in the United States and maybe more in Europe, I feel like I read, or in Asia.
Lambert, like Clay Aiken, has a fairly narrow audience, but it's very
intense. But they love
him.
And that's what I'm saying is that people who compete on this show in some cases build up these followings that are so intensely loyal that you can work forever.
Right.
Stephen, you get, as a person who writes about music, and Mark, I'm sure you do too, regular emails about the releases of new CDs from former American Idol competitors that no one hardly remembers.
Oh, no, absolutely. I remember getting a press release for Kimberly Caldwell's debut album, mm-hmm. which came out 7 years after the season that she was on.
On a big label, as I recall.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. This show, which is so built on this is a platform and you're going to be a star, she had her moment, her momentum, and it took 6 years for somebody to say, let's actually be in the Kimberly Caldwell singing business.
Yeah.
And to me, that was a very telling press release, although albeit not in the way that they had intended.
Yeah, now, Stephen has a thing he wants to drop here, I can tell.
I'm holding up my papers eagerly.
Does it rhyme with Clucky Blovington?
For those who've never been to my desk, I have like 30 Bucky Covington CDs lining the back wall. No, actually, it is a metric for why this show is about to go off the air.
Okay.
The winner of season 13 was a guy named Caleb Johnson. Honestly,
I believe you.
I had never heard of Caleb Johnson, mm-hmm. and
why don't we just declare the winner Tanya Ballard Brown?
I mean, you might as well.
Who would know?
And I'm not dumping on Caleb Johnson. I've never heard Caleb Johnson.
Exactly, I have no opinion.
So Caleb Johnson might be super duper talented.
Yeah,
Caleb Johnson's album. The statistics that I've seen are that Caleb Johnson's album sold 11,000 copies. The winner of season 13 of American Idol, which even in its diminished state is viewed by millions of people.
Yeah.
11,000 copies. That is less than one third of the albums sold by William Hung's second album.
and we should back up for a second and explain who William Hung is. So William Hung, for those of you who don't remember, was the young man who sang She Bangs, and they were partly making fun of his English, and he became, I don't know,
kind of almost a meme before there were memes.
A meme before there were meme, a viral video before there was quite such a thing as a viral video.
He was like the famous bad singer on American Idol.
Right.
And he put out a famously bad record.
Right.
This was the follow-up.
Right.
Hung for the Holidays sold 35,000 copies.
Oh, Hung for the Holidays.
So the winner of American Idol
They didn't go with the stockings were hung.
That is good.
It's maybe in the liner notes. But,
also good.
I will confess I've not heard Hung for the Holidays. But when you have the winner of season 13 selling a fraction of the albums sold by like a novelty also-ran from season three, that's how diminished it is.
Not even an also-ran. He was a novelty never was.
Right, because he was, just an auditioner.
What happened that Kelly Clarkson and Fantasia and Carrie Underwood and all these people can find their footing? What happened?
It's not always clear to me because there are, and here is where,
Did the industry change? I mean, the industry changed a bit, too.
The industry definitely changed.
Yeah.
And it's worth also pointing out that with the exception of Miranda Lambert, who came in, third on Nashville?
I think that's right.
I don't think that there is not a significant other pop star, country star, R&B star who has come out of any singing show with the potential exception of Fifth Harmony from The X Factor.
One Direction did, and Carly Rae Jepsen was on Canadian Idol.
But these are foreign singing shows, and so we don't have, as the American viewing public, we don't have the baggage to overcome of, they were on a singing show. They came to us as pop stars.
And I mean, there has been, and this is where I would like to at least discuss the actual quality of this singing, because there have been people on these shows who are very good. And when Tanya says, like, why do some become gigantic stars and other ones do not? When I started going down the rabbit hole of kind of listening to clips, I started listening to Jessica, if you can cue up that Tamira Gray. I'm not meant to live alone. Turn this house into a home. When I climb the stair and turn the key, please be there. Still in love with me. That is Tamira Gray on Burt Bacharach Night, the first season.
Keeping it current.
Performing A House Is Not a Home. That is one of my favorite Idol performances. But in that season, she was up against Kelly Clarkson and Justin Guarini. And I did not bring any Justin Guarini, but I did bring a little Kelly Clarkson. I was a bugger and some squeezing and some bugging and some teasing and some stuff like that there. I was a petting and some spooning and some happy honeymooning and some stuff like that there. And used to think that love was just a lot of rubbish, a mess of cabbage, a mess of cabbage. But now my attitude is only long enough it. And baby, you done it. Ooh, so that is Kelly Clarkson on Big Band Night. The thing that I loved about that is that Kelly Clarkson in that moment, that was one of her biggest performances of the season, and it's not a straight, like, radio hit.
Right.
And so there used to be these really cool moments where you would find out that people could sing, partly because they would make them do something a little bit different from what they normally do.
Well, this was the advantage and the disadvantage of the sort of aggressively, tightly held theme nights that the show had in the first, let's say, half of its run.
Right.
Because while you would hear screaming on the internet, which is the only thing that you can hear on the internet, that it's not fair that Singer X is being forced to perform on Country Night because they're not a country singer. What does that prove? You also end up sort of separating those who can sing anything.
Right.
Like, I would argue, Kelly Clarkson could sing anything.
Right.
And that was an example that you just heard right there. From people who could do their one thing specifically and maybe do it well, maybe just do it loudly.
Right.
But in the first, I don't know, 7-8 seasons or so, they stuck very closely to having those theme nights, and they did not allow the singers to game those nights.
Right.
If it was Stevie Wonder night, find a Beatles cover that Stevie Wonder did and we can work it out.
Right.
Because that's cheating.
Right.
Well, you had Chris Daughtry, a rocker, managed to turn everything into Honga Donga Dang.
Yeah. That's true.
So if he was given Stevie Wonder night, it'd be like, Honda's cold.
All right. I want to hear where Tanya's going.
Well, I was just going to say, in reference to doing the arrangements. So when I was doing my cabaret act, my cabaret act. It was not called Just Tanya, no.
Tanya Ballard. Was it called Tanya Ballard Blue?
No.
That'd be great, though.
And I was working with a music director. One thing he said about doing different arrangements is because, for example, when Kelly did stuff like that there, you don't want people watching you and listening to you thinking about Bette Midler.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You want them to appreciate what you're doing. So I can see doing different arrangements to try to not make it seem like you're doing karaoke and trying to sing exactly the very exact same notes. When they were doing that, obviously they seemed to be able to surface people who ended up having careers in business, because you said you found the people who could sing across genres.
Mm-hmm. When you have people who do change those arrangements up, sometimes you get a very unexpected.
Is this going to be Blake
thing.
Lewis?
No.
I know exactly which one you're going to play.
You get a person who takes a song and it's in a style and it's different. I need that Chickeezy clip.
Turn me on when I feel lonely. People tell me that she's only fooling. I know she isn't. She don't give boys the eye.
I liked that dude a lot, but this was Beatles night, because that's She's a Woman, the Beatles. And that performance...
B-side of I Feel Fine.
Thank you, Mark. That performance starts with him sitting with a kind of like, what would you call it, a jug band? Like it's a sort of...
It's sort of an Appalachian kind of bluegrass string band.
Thank you. He starts off like that, and then it turns into this big kind of loud, and he's running all around the stage, and it's really cool, and it was really unexpected. And so when you get people who do something that's out of kilter, sometimes you get something that's really cool like that.
We've been talking about genre a lot, and Tanya, you posed the question of what happened. I remember when this show first came on the air, my big objection to it, my bafflement with it, it was running 17 years behind what actual hits on the radio sounded like. It's a show that has always rewarded sort of adult contemporary singing and was really looking for like the next Whitney Houston at a time when Whitney Houston had been largely off the radio for a variety of reasons, for years and years and years.
Yeah.
You don't have that many singers like that. I mean, you have Adele, who will sing a big power ballad. But a lot of that, what I would call like 80s style adult contemporary music of the variety that I was listening to when I was in high school, they were suddenly trying to present that as very popular music.
Right.
And then from there, they chased trends. Philip Phillips sounded like Mumford & Sons, and Daughtry sounded like Creed.
But they never became or really tried to be, for example, relevant in hip hop, which partly tells you the age group that they were serving. Because one of the things that has always been a gigantic myth around American Idol is that it was a teenager show.
Right.
I think for the most vocal people, perhaps it was. The reported average age for that audience was like 45.
Right.
It was not a children's, it was never a little kid's show. It was always something that moms and grandmas and people like that watched, and it was not a teeny bopper show.
Right.
And had it been really trying to chase a young audience, you would have seen it at least interested in more actual popular music.
Right.
I don't know. And we're not going to get into, obviously, there's a million things we
can't
can
even
talk
get
about.
Into the fact that for one season, Nicki Minaj and Mariah Carey
were
there.
Yes! That's right. I forgot all about
yes,
that.
Yes, the shade, honey, the shade. Yes.
And that was the final season that I watched. Yeah. Steve and Tyler couldn't do it, but Nicki and Mariah could.
Why was Nicki Minaj there? If they've never...
Nicki Minaj was there to provoke Mariah Carey. That's why she was there.
But I guess what I'm saying is if what Steven was saying is correct, or what everyone has just said is that they weren't trying to do popular music, why was Nicki Minaj there?
I think you're right. I think that was undoubtedly an effort. You're absolutely right. I think that was an effort to get into something that was maybe relevant to anyone under, 25.
Well, I think there might be another potential argument for why she was there and why Mariah was there, because my last season that I watched was the Candace Glover season. And that followed, I want to say, 5 straight seasons where the winner of American Idol was a young, cute white boy with a guitar. That season, the Candace Glover season, was a season where you could watch the show straining mightily to produce a female winner.
Yeah.
They, in the top 10 that they selected, the 5 men were so uninteresting compared to the women, who were not necessarily fireballs of charisma as it was. But they worked so hard to make sure after 5 seasons of young white boys with guitars winning to get a female winner at all costs. And for all the discussion of over the years of the backstage machinations of the show to sort of...
To manipulate the results
or encourage a specific winner. That's
right.
The only season where I felt that it was actually happening.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun to watch. It wasn't interesting to watch. But that's a season where they wanted a female winner and brought in 2 very powerful female judges to... thing that their personal brands have in common is strong womanhood.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. And they're both musically credible, whatever else,
Yes.
They're both industry credible.
Compared to, for example, Randy Jackson.
He's a producer, I've heard, and has worked with Mariah Carey, I've heard, a million times. Anyway.
And the Jacksons. I feel like he brought that up a couple of times.
And Whitney Houston, a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. I will be interested to hear what all of you, if you still have opinions or ever had opinions, let us know. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH and tell us what you think or thought, what you will replace this show with in the future if you are still watching it. And when we come back, we're going to do another round of people we're pulling for right after this.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message come from TaxAct, the easy, fast, and affordable way to file federal and state tax returns. And TaxAct will guide you every step of the way. Start anywhere and finish anytime on your computer, tablet, or phone. If your deal is getting the best deal, go to taxact.com/pop and get simple federal and state returns free. TaxAct.com. You got this.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We are going to go on to our, you know, a segment that we've done a few times. We always enjoy it. It's called People We're Pulling For. This is where we talk about somebody whose work we're jazzed about or who we're hoping is going to about to have a really good year. It's always a good thing to do at the beginning of the year. Stephen Thompson, give me somebody that you're pulling for.
It's Oscar season. And for me, one of the great joys of Oscar season is most years you wind up having a lot of attention paid to somebody who's really drifted out of the public eye and is very talented and very deserving. Last year, it was kind of Michael Keaton with Birdman. This year, it's happening around like Lily Tomlin for the movie Grandma. It's happening for a little bit with Jane Fonda for her work in Youth. You get these industry veterans who are suddenly like walking an awards show red carpet alongside the Kate Blanchett's of the world. And I always love that. I always love seeing those people rewarded. And thinking about it reminded me of how satisfying it was to see that attention. This is probably 15, 20 years ago, seeing that attention heaped on Robert Forster.
Oh, yes.
Who is one of my favorite character actors. When I say I'm pulling for him, he's been working constantly. Mm-hmm. He's been working so much. His IMDb page lists 175 credits.
Yeah.
Well, that was part of his story during the press run-up with Jackie Brown, was that he had always been working just like a monster. Right, and then he had this thing,
but working
and he was
on
just
like,
going to keep working on
working
it.
Working on like Roger Corman movies.
Yeah,
like
working on a lot of different kinds of stuff.
Z-list direct-to-video movies. And all of a sudden, Quentin Tarantino kind of plucked him out of that, put him in Jackie Brown. That is just one of my favorite movie performances ever. He's so subtle. He's wearing those 30 years of plugging away on his face. He's so good. You know, he's popped up in some prestige-y films in the years since. He's in The Descendants, for example, but he's also in, like, Olympus Has Fallen, which I hated. he's just in, you know, he was on, like, Backstrom, that Rainn Wilson show. Yeah. Like, he's just, they're constantly cycling him through everything. And I want to see him kind of return to that Oscar glory. I want to see him given more runs of that kind of appreciation, because he is a wonderful actor. And if you haven't read his interview in the AV Club from 2000, it's still online. I checked to make sure it's still online. When I put together a book of AV Club interviews in like 2002, this was the interview that I ended the book with. It is just an absolutely wonderful discussion. He's a motivational speaker on the side, and he tells this story. Basically, the lesson of the story is you can be, like, you can command respect by demanding it, or you can command respect by just being the nicest person you possibly can be. And this is a gross generalization.
Sure.
But basically, it's this wonderful story about how important it is to just be as nice to people as possible. And you start to sense how this guy managed to book 175 acting jobs. Mm-hmm. It made him, to me, wonderfully rootable and a really interesting actor. Somebody I just love, Robert Forster.
Robert Forster. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Stephen Thompson. Tanya Ballard Brown, somebody that you are pulling for.
I am pulling for Chris Rock, who is hosting the Oscars again, 10 years. He finally got this gig again. 10 years ago, he did it. He ticked off Sean Penn and lots of other people.
He's a good Oscar host.
How hard is it to tick off Sean
Penn? That's always
kind of bad. It was mixed reviews. I went back and read some of the reviews. Some people thought he did a terrible job. Some people loved it.
Yeah. Well, he besmirched the good name of Jude Law.
Yes, yes, yes. I realize that the Oscars, this is a heavy job that most of the hosts have not gotten right.
Yeah,
right. So I am pulling for Chris Rock that, one, he won't have, I guess, a Sean Penn moment this year, that he will be able to make this something that I will want to watch for 3 or 10 hours, because it's a long, long,
it's
long,
endless.
Long, endless show.
I want to congratulate Tanya for her restraint.
Oh, no.
No.
I have a second.
Oh, you have a second.
More predictable.
All right.
Sure, I know where this is going.
Person I'm rooting for.
Go ahead, TVB. I know where you're going with this.
Also, Idris Elba is nominated.
Well, he's not nominated for an Oscar yet.
No.
But he's nominated for
He's nominated for Golden Globes and SAGs. Hello, I have paid attention. Oh, and NAACP Award as well.
Image Award, right?
Yes. I am rooting for him because, I mean, honestly, he's got some stiff competition in those categories. Yeah. I am a member of SAG. I don't want to, you know, suggest that I've already decided what my vote will be prior to seeing the movies or anything, but I'm just, you know, I'm rooting for Idris. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm also a member of that same guild, and my copy of Beasts of No Nation is sitting unwatched in the hopes that I don't have to slog through a movie about, like, child soldiers.
Did you like it? The lead, the little boy, yes.
Yeah, not necessarily enjoy. I asked the wrong question.
Right. Yeah. I read some criticism from some people who felt like they wanted Idris to be more menacing.
Yeah.
But I feel like he didn't want to overtake this little boy who was just someone they plucked out of obscurity, who is really the star of the movie.
So right when I was about to congratulate Tanya for her restraint in not picking Idris, her other one's Idris. Yes. Which is cool, because that's Tanya.
Yes.
Tanya's waiting for your call. All right. Thank you very much, Tanya Ballard-Brown. Mark Hirsch, who are you pulling for, buddy?
The person I'm rooting for this year probably doesn't care if anybody's rooting for her. Her name is Leslie Jones.
Oh, she
is on Saturday Night Live.
Yes, and hilarious.
Mm-hmm. She has been on Saturday Night Live for about a year, and in that time, you know who she is.
Right.
She has come on. She was, I believe, hired as a writer.
She was hired as a writer, that's
initially,
right.
And then to fill the dead space that had suddenly become Weekend Update, had been brought in to do just sort of a desk piece where she just delivered a monologue of her own.
Yeah.
And with that, she angered a lot of people.
Yep.
And amused a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And since then, she has been so strong at those desk pieces that I have long been hoping to start a campaign to wipe Weekend Update clean of Colin Jost and Michael Che and just give it to her. Mm. Because one of the things that she has that Weekend Update does not have right now is a point of view.
Mm. Right.
And Leslie Jones, if you gave her Weekend Update, she would bring a point of view to Weekend Update.
She gives you that feeling that, like, she honestly, as you say, does not care.
She does not care. My theory is that Saturday Night Live for her is a signpost. She's been doing stand-up for decades.
Yeah,
she's
a little older than your average person starting out on SNL too.
When I watched her special, she is hilarious.
Yeah,
hilarious. She's been doing stand-up for decades, and my feeling is that Saturday Night Live called. She said, "Great," and if Saturday Night Live said, "We don't need you anymore," she'd go
do something.
Oh well, great, and she would go do something else. She does not need me to root for her. She's going to be in the new Ghostbusters movie.
New Ghostbusters
movie. Desperately does not need me to root for her. I don't know if she's going to have a breakout year. I hope we see a somewhat increased Leslie Jonesification of the culture in 2016.
Thank you very much, Mark Hirsch. My pick, the person that I am pulling for, is Rashida Jones.
Ah.
I first saw her in any significant way on The Office when she was brought in to be the completely thankless obstacle between Jim and Pam on The Office, and proceeded to make that a situation where you really felt for her. And there were moments where you were like, why is this lady getting this bad deal here just because she's the obstacle in the in the romance? And then, of course, she went on to be on Parks and Rec, where her relationship with Amy Poehler, her chemistry with Amy Poehler.
And Perkins was
one of the most important pieces of that show. And she also had a wonderful comedic chemistry with Rob Lowe. And she just was fantastic. And with Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
So she was fantastic on that show. She is about to appear later this month in a show on TBS called Angie Tribeca, which I have just started watching. It is essentially a police squad-y send-up of cop shows.
Sold.
I have only started watching it. They are going to broadcast it 25 episodes in a row or something like that. They're essentially doing a binge on TBS, which on the one hand, you're like, cool experiment. And on the other hand, you're like, are they burning your show? But I just started watching it today. It's really funny when Glenn talks about joke density. This show has a lot of joke density. It's one of those things where one of the cops, his partner's a dog, but like they just call the dog by a a name, and they never reference the fact that it's a dog. They just talk about it and to it like it's another cop. And it's a very weird running gag. But there are a bunch of, like, it's one of those shows where you'll have a thing where the guy comes into the evidence room and the forensics lady is, like, carefully looking at a piece of evidence, and the cop says, "Are there any prints on it?" And she says, "No, I wiped them off." It's just one of those dumb, like, police squad-y, airplane-y kind of, you just know there's going to be another joke in 3 seconds if you don't like that one. So I kind of dig the first one, right? Mm-hmm. It's early, but I would love for that show to be really good because I do love her, and I remembered after I started thinking about this, I often credit Brooklyn Nine-Nine for being the time that I figured out that I could like Andy Samberg.
Sure.
Yes.
But in fact, the first time I figured out that I could like Andy Samberg was when he played opposite her in Celeste and Jesse Forever, which is a movie she also wrote, which is about this couple that breaks up, and then there's kind of it's a long-running romance. It's a really good movie. If you've never seen Celeste and Jesse Forever, it's kind of one of those movies that's floating around that a lot of people haven't seen who would really like it. Mm. She's really talented and interesting. She's also currently in a Verizon commercial with Peggy Lipton, who's her mom in real life. Her parents are Peggy Lipton and Quincy Jones. She comes from good stock.
Yeah.
She is in this commercial with Peggy Lipton, and they're just kind of, you know, riffing as mother and daughter. And my favorite part of the story is that after this, on Twitter, there was this woman who was like, you know, why did they cast someone who, like, looks nothing like she's old enough to be Rashida Jones's mother? And Rashida Jones on Twitter is like, hey, that is my mother.
Hello.
I'm such a fan of her, and I'm such a fan of kind of the role she's playing. If you follow her on Twitter, she's a really interesting, thoughtful, engaged. She's one of these celebrities like Jesse Williams from Grey's Anatomy, these celebrities who are very, like, politically aware on Twitter and interesting to follow because they think about interesting things and talk about interesting things other than just here's my work or whatever. I'm very interested in what she's going to do. I was talking to my pal, Alan Sepinwall, today, and he was pointing out that it's funny to see her in this broad comedy because she's played a lot of straight women to kind of broader characters. She was in I Love You, Man, where she's the girlfriend slash wife of one of those bros. And it's just, she's been doing that, and now this is a bigger comedy. So I'm very, very psyched, and I am definitely pulling for her. Those are a bunch of people that we are pulling for, some of whom you would not have predicted, and some of whom, Tanya, you might have known we would
be
pulling for.
You could set your watch by.
You could set your watch by. And when we come back, we're just going to keep the happiness and good wishes rolling, and we're going to come back with our favorite segment of this and every week, What is Making Us Happy This Week? So come right back.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. NPR's new Politics podcast is where NPR's political reporters talk to you like they talk to each other, with weekly roundups, short takes on news, and reporting from every stop on the campaign trail. You don't have to keep up with politics to know what's happening this election year. You just have to keep up with them. Listen and subscribe to the NPR Politics podcast at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, as we've mentioned, it is Oscar season, or it's at least coming up on Oscar season. We got the Golden Globes coming up. And as such, I'm already preparing for the Pop Culture Happy Hour Oscars Omnibus in a few weeks. And one way that we all have to prepare for the Oscars Omnibus is that we have to see all the Best Picture nominees. And if there's one thing I don't have time to do right before the Oscars, it's watch all the Best Picture nominees. So I've been mainlining as many of the likely nominees as possible. That has meant I've watched a bunch of good movies in the last couple weeks, including stuff like Anomalisa that I'm still kind of unpacking. I don't actually know if I like Anomalisa. Mm-hmm. My feelings are strong in both directions on it. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk more about it. I watched The Revenant, as I said on Twitter, not the zippy wilderness romp I've been led to expect. It's like you think it is, only grimmer.
Okay. Really? Grimmer?
Not quite as whimsical as you'd been led to believe. Mad Max Fury Road.
That's such a good movie.
Which is a really, really interesting movie. And fun. If you stop and think about any of the logic behind it, it really doesn't hold up at all. I don't recommend doing that. But I greatly enjoyed it. And finally, I watched Room. And Linda, you mentioned Room when we talked about the Toronto International Film Festival. Brie Larson is kind of an Oscar front runner in the lead role. Is a beautiful and really moving and kind of troubling movie. I don't want to spoil anything, but I love the way they pace out the events of the film. Mm-hmm. There's a very key thing that happens, and they decide to make it happen right in the middle of the movie. So you get the build up to it and the aftermath of it, and both of them are equally important, and both of them are equally thought-provoking.
Yeah.
That is a terrific movie. Definitely one of my favorite films of the year.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff. This is the time of year when they kind of dump all the good stuff. I've been just gobbling it up.
So Steven's been seeing lots of movies. Thank you very much, buddy. Good pick. Tanya Ballard-Brown, what is making you happy this week?
Well, Steven has been doing what actually I should be doing. Watching these movies, but I was like waiting to get them in the mail and then the download and all that kind of stuff. I have been catching up on Netflix shows, and so I watched Master of None, and I finally got around to Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Jessica Jones. You know why I love Jessica Jones? Because Luke Cage was in it. And you know why I love Luke Cage? Because, boy, he's all the things I thought he would be when I, you know, I'm a Black Panther comic follower, not so much a Luke Cage. As I did a little digging, I was like, oh, I get a whole Luke Cage series this year on Netflix too. So I'm happy about that. That is making me really happy. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, thank you very much, Tanya Ballard-Brown. Mark Hirsch, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
What's making me happy this week is Otis Redding's Soul Manifesto 1964 to 1970. 12 CDs, came out in October, but I got it for my birthday. It's fantastic.
Oh, nice.
It is every album that Otis Redding released in his lifetime and beyond. If you want to know about Otis Redding, you can mainline it in about 6 or 7 hours because these 12 CDs are pretty much only a half hour each because it was the early 60s and that's what albums were at the time. It is a very affordable price point. I believe you can get it for somewhere in the $40 to $50 range.
Wow.
Normally, full career box sets are priced so expensively
right.
that the only person who would buy them is someone who is already hooked
on that
person. And you're pretty much replacing albums that you already have. I had a 3-CD singles collection of his, and that was it. This covers so much more. It is so affordable. If you're interested in Otis Redding, just splurge for the price of 3 CDs. You get 12, and you get Otis Redding.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Mark Hirsch. Okay, making me happy this week, I got two things. First, I got a TV show. I was a little bit behind. I finally caught up on the FXX show, You're the Worst, which everyone had been telling me was so good and had gotten so good. And this is a show that was created by somebody I actually sort of know, whose name is Stephen Falk, who used to be a recapper at Television Without Pity at the same time as me. So we had met a handful of times at like recapper things in Vegas. The show is about a couple who meet and get together, even though they're both sort of messed up people. But it's not one of these shows. They're not hateful. They're just messy. And I really, really have enjoyed it. And it is one of those shows. They're now through 2 seasons. They're renewed for another one. It is a show that has only gotten better and better and smarter and stronger. And it's really funny. But they also did a story this season that was of very high quality about depression, which rarely happens on television with this level of intelligence and sensitivity. And there's been some really good writing online about it. But it's also just a really good show. So You're the Worst, that's A. Also, I have kicked off my resolution to read more very quickly. Got off to a very fast start. I read a novel called Everything I Never Told You by a writer named Celeste Ng. And this was, I think, Amazon's best book of 2014.
Oh.
It is a really terrific novel that is about a family. The whole book is about kind of the fallout from this death and how it affects the family and trying to kind of solve the causes of what had happened. And it's a really good family story. There is a mystery element to it, but it's not pulpy at all. It's sad, but it's also in some ways very humane toward the characters. I liked it very much. Again, it's called Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng. Very good, and I highly recommend it. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can follow Tanya at T-double-B. That's T-D-O-U-B-L-E-B. You can follow Mark at Space City Mark. That's Space City and then M-A-R-C. And you can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. And our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, is not Tanya's band. It is the band that provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to all of you for listening. And we will see you right back here next week.